Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus, with us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We're talking, Steve, about this guy who ate nine waffles as the fantasy punishment. You know about this story, I assume?
I do. Yeah. I follow the story. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm saying, like, I don't, you've never met me, but I'm, you know, big dude, weight wise, unfortunately, not height wise. And I'm saying I was saying that I could knock out 16 waffles and be done in 10 hours. But I don't actually know if I've ever been to a Waffle House, so I don't know exactly how big they are, but I can put down a waffle, Steve. How many waffles do you think you would have gotten out of the Waffle House for you?
Probably more than nine, somewhere in between the nine and the 16. I think they are the size of the plate. They're some big waffles.
They're big waffles. So, yes, they are.
Yeah. And I think so. I saw somebody else say he put syrup on it and stuff. You know, he's doctoring them up. That was a mistake.
Big mistake.
To get out of there. He was milking it. He was trying to get the social media hub and all that stuff. He was milking it.
That's a fair point. That's true. All right, Steve. Let's switch gears to football here. Sheldon Richardson we brought up Sheldon Richardson a few times. He just signed with the Minnesota Vikings. I'm curious. Is that any kind of like any loss at all that the Browns were not able to re-sign him after they cut him, or no big deal?
I mean, I don't think it's gonna be the difference in a Super Bowl or not winning a Super Bowl, but
right.
You know, I think I would rather have him on the team than not have him on the team. I would say that it certainly puts a little bit more pressure on some, you know, Malik Jackson rushing from the interior, some of the other young guys like Jordan Elliott, Tommy Togiai, and so I think there's just, you know, those other guys got to step up and perform, and it just hurts depth just a little bit, I'd say, on that defensive interior.
Steve, this week we got to hear from Baker Mayfield, of course. He talked at mandatory minicamp, and he was asked about his contract. And Bull and I went back and forth on this conversation about when the Browns should offer him a contract and when he would take it, if he would take it. What do you think the right play is for Baker going into year four? His year five is a player, or it's a team option. They'll pick that up, of course. But if you're the Browns, when do you offer a contract to Baker Mayfield?
Oh, man, I don't have a good answer on this one because of it's not my job. And my job is to have a good answer for this. I'm torn on him and Lamar and Josh Allen. I really am. I think, you know, Josh Allen peaked last year, and, you know, Baker turned it around in the second half, but, you know, we're doubting him after 6 or 7 weeks of the season, and Lamar regressed a little bit last year. So I think all of them are in this intriguing spot. The benefit of being early is you might save a little bit of money, and but then the, you know, of course, the downside is Carson Wentz and Jared Goff. So we're in this world where you have to balance recency bias of guys like Jared Goff getting paid and Carson Wentz getting paid, and buyer's remorse setting in within a year of both of those guys, essentially, or a year or two of both of those guys signing contracts, right? Balancing that versus your evaluation of the player and what he's able to do. So I think from a Baker standpoint, I think, you know, waiting it out gives him an opportunity to maybe really get a big payday after this year, potentially if he has a really nice season. And then from a Brown standpoint, I think there's an element to still wanting to see a little bit more, you know, just a little bit more confirmation with Baker and keep talking. And ultimately you want to get him locked up, but not at a price where you're completely overpaying.
Steve, we were talking earlier, having a conversation about the value, you know, how important is a head coach? How important is a manager? We were talking really like everybody values the football head coach, but we were talking about how like Terry Francona here in Cleveland. The Indians are not very talented, but they're 10 games over, and he plays a big role in that. Is there any way that, like, we have war for baseball, we have, you know, all these analytics that can give you a number to your PFF grading system. Is there a way to do this for managers in baseball, but for more for you, for head coaches in football? Can we come up with a number grade? Is it possible for a head coach?
Yeah, you just have to know that there's just so many dependencies. Just like in football, right? There's so many. Baker Mayfield's performance has depended heavily on the offensive line, the playmakers, the play callers. So knowing that that occurs, I think from a football standpoint, you go back and there's intuition, right? So like with Andy Reid, we just had an article a couple weeks ago. I didn't write it. Eric Eager had it. I think he had Andy Reid as the top head coach because he's a big Andy Reid fan. Because it over Belichick, right? And it was a big issue in New England, because the things that you can quantify in Andy Reid's career is he had Donovan McNabb and he had Alex Smith and he had all these other types of quarterbacks, and he always elevated them against the rest of their career baseline. So I think that's one of the ways you look at a coach, is based off what he has, what did those players do in other places, right? So that's one way of doing it. I think the other way is actually using PFF grades and saying, here's how well guys graded, here's how well this offense performed from a production standpoint, kind of comparing the two. And if you have less talented players, but you're still getting production, I think that's a good coaching job. I think just fourth down decision making is a small piece of this big puzzle, because it's essentially adding win probability to your team if you're making good decisions over time. So I think there's a lot of different variables. You can kind of add them all up and kind of get toward a head coaching score. But it's difficult because you're always trying to separate the performance on the field versus the expectation, and knowing that the coach has some hand in that, but of course the talent has more hand in that. So trying to like weigh that is always a challenge. And in baseball, you have a guy like Tito Francona being awesome in Boston and being awesome in Cleveland. So I think when you have a history and a track record, you can just kind of see it and know when there's a guy that can elevate everybody around him.
Steve, the Bears still plan on starting Andy Dalton week one no matter what. How much BS is that?
I don't think it's BS, and I also don't think that the reaction on Twitter was warranted. I've been trying to quit Twitter these last few weeks, and I peeked in, and everybody's trashing the Bears.
Yeah.
Because I think there's nuance to this. It's not about Andy Dalton being the starter. It's about the Bears trying to make the right decision for Justin Fields. And that's exactly what Matt Nagy did on my boss's podcast, Chris Collinsworth podcast. He went in and he said, our plan is for Justin Fields. It is a Justin Fields-driven plan. When is it best for him to play? We think it's best for him to sit and to learn. And whether that's 3 weeks or 1 week or 17 weeks, we don't know, but we know that that's our plan and that's what we want. So therefore, Andy Dalton's the starter, which is different from everybody overreacting, being like, why are you letting Andy Dalton play? He's not better than Justin Fields and idiot Bears. So there's nuance to this. They're doing what's best by Justin Fields, which is smart. You do, all of your decisions should be based around Justin Fields, because Andy Dalton doesn't matter in the long term for the Bears. So I looked at it through that lens and said, okay, I think the Bears are fine for doing that. And then I'm curious to see when is the right time in their mind for Fields to take over.
What I get what you're saying. Anybody that's response to that is, Justin Fields is better than Andy Dalton. That's a stupid response. I get it. I get what you're saying. My problem with what he's saying is, what is the point of saying the comment was, or one of his comments was, there's no scenario which Justin Fields would start. In a way, the reason I don't like that, even if he believes that internally, is don't you always want your players to think, even if it's not true, that they have a chance to be the starter week one? I would think that there's a little part of you that if you don't think you can start week one, maybe you're not quite as motivated. I just don't see the point of saying there's no scenario where that would happen, because there probably is some scenarios. Even if he thinks in general it's better for Justin Fields not to start right away, I just don't buy there's no scenario whatsoever that he couldn't start, and I don't see the point of saying it either way.
Yeah, that part I do agree with, because I think that might take it a step further. I think what you're trying to balance, though, as a head coach, is loyalty to veterans versus loyalty to your franchise quarterback, right? So they signed Andy Dalton. It was the most unexciting offseason, because it's like, all right, the Bears are going to make a huge move at quarterback, and they missed on everybody, and then they got Andy Dalton. And I imagine, you know, it's Matt Nagy just trying to show some sort of loyalty to Andy and maybe trying to speak to the locker room saying, you know, hey, veteran players, I'm going to stand by you and all this stuff. Even though we got this superstar here, I'm going to stick with you. So I'm assuming there's some sort of whatever psychological game coaches like to play, that's a part of it. Or I'm just completely overreacting to this and he's just sticking with the veteran, because some coaches do have this comfort level with veterans. They just the other piece of it could be Justin Fields really isn't as far along as they think, and they just know. They just might know at this point, hey, he won't be ready week one. It might be week three, it might be week five, but we know it won't be week one, so I'm just going to go out there and say it.
Steve, who is more valuable to the Browns long term, Denzel Ward or Nick Chubb?
Oh, Denzel Ward, not even close. You know that.
Dustin, look who you're talking to here.
I'm just asking. I got to ask, Steve.
The fans need to know. Yeah, the fans need to know. Because Denzel Ward, just because of the value of not just the starting corner, but it's your corner, your second and third corner, right? If Denzel Ward is gone, it's about replacing him. And just right now in a vacuum, then it becomes, you know, Greg Newsome and Greedy Williams have to start, and Troy Hill. When having Denzel Ward as a starter and all of those guys being cornerbacks 2, 3, and 4, it is just so much better for the secondary. Whereas if you lose Nick Chubb, forget even just Kareem Hunt, it's like, all right, how are we going to replace that? It's a lot easier to replace running back production, especially when you have a good run-blocking offensive line and a good play caller and a good pass game. It's just the nature of football. You know, load up in the secondary as much as possible.
I get what you're saying. And I agree with the general philosophy on running backs and PFF's take on that. I do think there is something special. I think there's something to be said for, you know, you when you build the culture of a team, having guys that fit the culture and lead the culture, and I think Nick Chubb is a part of that. Certainly from a positional standpoint, there's no arguing that. I would definitely argue that Nick Chubb is a better running back than than Denzel Ward is a cornerback, but I get where you're coming from. But I think Nick Chubb, I guess, in the bottom line is, to me, is more important to the Browns than most running backs are to their teams.
Yeah, and I agree, because I think Chubb and Derrick Henry, there are a handful of running backs who have consistently done it above and beyond even their run blocking. As great as we've talked about how the Browns' offensive line was last year, Chubb has been forcing missed tackles and creating 4 yards after contact per rush since he came in, you know, even when the line wasn't as good. So there is something to that, whereas a Zeke Elliott and a Todd Gurley, they were thought to be the culture folks too, right? I mean, they paid Todd Gurley just like out of a thanks because he scored so many touchdowns and they got burned by it at the Rams. But Gurley and Zeke didn't do it above and beyond their supporting cast, especially Gurley. I mean, Gurley's entire career essentially was a roller coaster that coincided with the rest of the supporting cast, his offensive line. So if there's an argument for the folks that either could get paid or deserve a little bit more credit, it's the Nick Chubbs, Derrick Henrys of the world that have clearly gone above and beyond even what the run blocking has given them.
All right, Steve, we started with a food question. Let's end with a food question. If you could only eat one fast food burger, fast food chicken sandwich, and fast food French fries for the rest of your life, which place would you choose for each of those things?
I like Chick-fil-A's chicken. Mm-hmm. I don't want to eat any fast food. Are they fast food? They're fast food, right?
That's fast food, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fast food.
Okay. I'll stick with the healthier fast food, like Chick-fil-A.
Is Chick-fil-A healthy?
It is healthy.
Healthier.
It's healthier. It's healthier. There's
only 400
calories per chicken sandwich.
My choice since 1998, and I'm sticking to that. So that's not in. In-N-Out Burger? Are they fast food?
Yeah, yes, sure.
Oh, what? In-N-Out, Chick-fil-A. I don't know on fries, though.
Are you not a fast food guy? Are you keep
no,
good,
not
good
really.
Shape
have you seen Steve? He's in great shape.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's smart. Much smarter than us.
Getting worse though over here. Getting worse.
The last Steve, year's been hard. Yeah,
Steve,
right.
We appreciate it, man. Thanks. We'll talk to you again soon.
Always
see you, man.
All right, Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.